More than 2 million people live in the greater Kansas City metropolitan area. That's more than 2 million stories, 2 million characters to get to know. Today kicks off our newest series, Portrait Sessions, hour-long conversations with the people who make living here interesting. On today's Portrait Session, we'll get to know Yolanda Comack, a force for health in her Raytown community. She teaches fitness, sells fresh homemade meals, runs a nonprofit for cancer patients, and builds trucks at a Ford plant. We'll get Yolanda Comack to sit in one place long enough for an interview after this news on Central Standard. Yolanda Comack commands the room. The impossibly sculpted woman stands in front of a crowd of about 40 people who writhe and grimace on their exercise mats. I wasn't in my workout clothes when I visited her Raytown fitness studio, so I don't know for sure what it's like to actually follow her instructions, but I'm guessing it hurts. Why? Because she repeatedly told the people making tortured faces at her that she wanted them to think about her the next day. Her faithful that morning ranged from the tank-topped fitness fanatics to struggling newcomers, teenagers to people on the other side of middle age. A few exercise machine users seemed to be watching the class for sheer entertainment value. It's my pleasure to welcome Yolanda Comack to the Live Talk studio this morning for Central Standard's first portrait session. Hi, Yolanda. How are you doing today?
I'm great.
So your exercise studio really seems to be a community hub, and it seems like that's about more than the workouts you could provide. Can you tell me a little bit about who comes to your studio and who makes up your community?
I get a wide range. It could be someone that's trying to maintain their health, someone that's trying to get fit, someone that just needs something extra to their workout. So I have young, older, you know, so it's a wide variety.
It's a lot of people. Is it mostly people within Raytown who are coming to your studio?
A lot of people are Raytown, but then I have a lot of clients that's followed me from other fitness centers that I used to work at.
Rumor has it you've been known to take your exercise classes grocery shopping?
Yes. I'll meet them at the grocery store, you know, show them how to shop. I'll even go to restaurants sometimes, show them healthier food choices.
Why is it that you think people don't already come with that knowledge?
Some people, they want to eat healthy. They just simply don't know how. Just haven't been taught.
How were you taught?
I watch what I ate, you know, for a very long time. And then, you know, once I battled cancer, it just made me more of aware of what I ate.
I do want to talk to you about your cancer, your battle with cancer. But first, I want to get to more of what you do in your day-to-day right now, just so people know who you are and what you do. I guess you prepare homemade meals that people can buy at your studio, which is an unusual feature for an exercise place. People really expect this food to be there for them. The day that I was there, you had sold out of breakfast, and people were legitimately mad.
Right. After you work out, you know, a lot of people, they want something to eat, or, you know, after they leave the gym, they don't have time to go home and prepare anything to eat. So I don't want their workout to go to waste. You was in here, you burned all these calories. The last thing that I want you to do is go home and sabotage your whole workout. So if that means that I have to prepare you something healthy so you're not going to McDonald's or something, I do that 3 times a week for my clients. And I even have people that don't come to work out with me. They'll still show up to buy a meal.
What kind of stuff do you make?
On Saturdays, I have healthy breakfast burritos. I'll either use veggies or I'll either use turkey sausage, whole wheat tortillas. You'll never get anything fried. I don't do a lot of red meat, you know, so I try to keep it as healthy as possible.
You teach several classes a day at your fitness studio and you prepare these meals, but you're also a single mom and you work another day job at the Ford plant, right?
Yes.
So you're worried about them not having time to cook something healthy to eat. But what about you? How do you have time to do that?
I'll get off from 4. I'll go home. I'll have a little break. Even if I have to prep something later that night to have during the day, you know, I'll do that. Classes start Saturday. The first one is at 8. So I'll get up at 6 because I want the food to be fresh when I get there. So I don't get a whole lot of sleep, but honestly, I don't require a whole lot of sleep.
So walk me through your day. Walk me through your day.
My day typically starts at about, I get up at about 3:45. If I really want to sleep in, I'll get up at about 4:40. I'll then get up, get my coveralls and everything ready. Then I'll set the alarm clock for my daughter so that she can get up and get ready for school. And then I'll leave. I'll drive to the Ford plant where I work on the transit side. And then I'll work. And then after I leave work, I'll run back home. I'll take my coveralls off, grab me a quick bite to eat, and then I'll put my workout clothes on. And then I'll go to the school, grab my daughter, and then I'll go to the gym. And then I'll do my first class at 5:30. Then I'll take a 30-minute break. And then I'll do another class at 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock. And then I'll take another 30-minute break. So about time I get out of the gym, it's after cleaning up and everything, it's about probably 10, a little after 10. And then I'll go home and watch a little TV, probably wash some clothes, take a shower, and then I'll get up and do it all over again.
Okay, so that really doesn't leave much time for sleep. Have you always been that way, not needing sleep?
I'm pretty active. You know, some days I'll sleep in. I don't do any classes on Friday. I'll go to Ford on Friday, but I don't do any on Friday. And then Sunday, since church services don't start till 11, if I'm not going anywhere doing any speaking engagements, I can sleep in till about 10 o'clock on Sundays.
So do you think there's a lesson in this? Because one of the big obstacles to a healthy lifestyle, at least for me, is time, just feeling like there's too much pressure and too much to get done to make room for the healthy habits that you know are healthy, but they require time and planning.
It doesn't take a whole lot of time to work out. If you could just take 30 minutes out of your day, I mean, I'm sure most people, you'll sit down and you'll watch TV for 20 minutes. You'll watch your favorite show, even if you have to get up and walk during the commercial breaks. Just walk in place during the commercial breaks. People say that they don't have time to work out. You have to make that time for yourself. You have to give yourself at least 30 minutes a day, at least 3 to 4 times a week, because, you know, we're getting older. And if you don't do it now, then it's going to be harder to do it later.
Yeah. Well, and when you talk about being healthy and that you have to do it, I guess that this seems like an obvious thing to some people, but maybe not to others. Why is it important? Why do you have to make time to work out?
It's very important. 70% of all health issues come from our eating habits. Our eating habits or just lack of exercise. So you have to make time, you know, for it. And like I said earlier, a lot of people honestly don't know how to eat. They want to eat healthy. They want to, but a lot of them, they just don't know how. And then I think some people are just comfortable. I know I need to lose this weight, but I'm just not motivated enough. I'm just, you know, I just can't do it.
So when you take people to teach them how to grocery shop, what are some of the lessons that it seems like people are surprised to learn or don't know already?
People are so surprised that, you know, if this says it's lower in sugar, if this says it's lower in fat, if this has no sodium, is this, they're surprised at how good it tastes. I don't want to eat that because it's low fat. I don't want any low fat cheese or I don't like avocados. They don't taste right with tuna. And that's why I start preparing meals, to show them you can eat healthy and it can still taste good.
Another sort of unusual feature of your studio is that there's a corner that's filled with wigs and scarves and notebooks full of newsletters from the Mayo Clinic. Can you tell us about that?
I have a cancer corner. Where cancer patients, they can come get wigs, they can come get head scarves, they can come get assistance with their copays, anything that they need, and they can come work out for free. They might can't do everything that we're doing, but I just want to give them an opportunity to get out of the house, to take their mind off of what they're going through, even if it's for an hour a day.
So this comes from your personal experience with cancer that you were motivated to do this stuff. Can you talk a little bit about your original diagnosis? You've written a book about your experience, Cancer Was My Blessing, and your description of finding the lump and coming to terms with what was going on was really tough to read in some ways, but take us through it. You were just about to turn 40.
I was 39 years old. I had never done a self-exam. I didn't know anybody with breast cancer. It didn't run in my family or anything. So I was over to my mom's because I was taking care of her after a stroke, and I found the lump myself. And since I was almost 40, I figured, well, maybe I'll just wait until I'm 40. So I went to my doctor, and he wasn't concerned about it. You know, I ate right. You know, I worked out. It did run in my family. So, you know, we went ahead and removed it, and I just went on about my life, not even worried about it.
Yeah, the day you had the surgery, you went back to work, in spite of doctor's orders not to lift things, I might add.
I'm pretty hard-headed. Everyone around me know, you know, that I'm pretty hard-headed. And then again, they removed it, and I'm still thinking, like, you know, it's nothing. You know, I'm going to be fine, and I'm going to get bored if I have to stay at home. So I'm going to go ahead and go to work, and then I'll just worry about what he says later.
And so, but did you have any moments of fear before going back to get those results, or you were just convinced you were fine?
I had no fear about it. I'm just thinking, like, they removed it. They're going to call me back, say it's nothing. It did not even cross my mind that it was anything.
Wow. Well, so you went back to get the results?
Yes, I first they called and said, well, you know, you need to come in. So I said, okay, you know, I'll go in. Still not concerned. If I was concerned, I would have, you know, took my sister with me. You know, that's like my support system. But I'm thinking, I'm fine. Let me go get these results. And I go in, and the doctor's kind of serious. And that kind of threw me, because we're always playing.
Yeah. No, please go on.
And so he's like, he said, I have good news and bad news. Which one do you want first? And I said, give me the good news first. He said, the good news is your stitches are ready to come out. So I'm thinking, like, if that's the good news, what's the bad news? He said, the bad news is you have breast cancer. And he didn't tell me what type it was. He just said breast cancer. And at that moment, it was only about 2 minutes, but it seemed like my whole world had stopped for, you know, 10 minutes.
Yeah. And so those next few weeks and months, you've chronicled it in your book, but it's pretty interesting. Like, the process of what I interpret it as learning to slow down and try not to do everything all the time. And we've just heard that you're a person who starts your day at 3:45 a.m., ends your day after 10 p.m., doesn't need a lot of sleep. It must have been incredibly difficult for you to slow down.
It was very hard. After I got the diagnosis, he told me, you just have, cancer, and I don't see it being really aggressive. He said, you won't even have to do chemo, you know, because I didn't know a lot about cancer, but I heard about chemo. He said, at the most, all you have to do is radiation. So after I heard that, I'm thinking, like, I don't have to do chemo. All I have to do is radiation. So I can keep on living the way I want. Well, a week later, the cancer center called, tell me to come in immediately. And she tells me, you have triple negative breast cancer. Triple negative breast cancer is the most aggressive form of breast cancer that a woman can have. It's the hardest to fight, and it has the highest reoccurrence rate. She said, you have to do chemo. You have to do two different types of chemo, and you have to do radiation. So they set me up my treatment plan. So I did two different chemos for up to 6 months, and then I went for radiation every day for 8 weeks. So that's when I started to say, uh-oh, your life's about to change. You're not going to be able to do chemo and go do your classes and take care of your daughter. So at that moment, I had to sit down and say, okay, life as you know it is going to be drastically changed for the next year.
How did you go about changing your life? I mean, a lot of those things are actually obligations, you know, like your daughter does need to be taken care of. You do need to earn a living. Like, how did you figure it out?
I sat still for a little while. I prayed a lot. And then I just made up my mind, you know, I'm going to beat this. You know, so for a couple of weeks after that chemo, it drains you. You know, you want to get up. You want to get out of bed. You don't want to sleep all day, but your body is not working together. So it was one day that I had meant to get up out of the bed to be woke when my daughter came home. And that day, I slept literally all day until she was knocking on the door. And that day, I made up my mind, I don't care if I get out of this bed for an hour a day, I'm going to do something. And strangely enough, I battled cancer and I did not cancel one workout class. I went to the gym, tied my head up. Some days I would literally get sick in the parking lot before I went and did my class. And I did not cancel one class because I wanted them to see if I could take care of my body with what I'm going through, nobody has an excuse not to take some time out of your day to do something for yourself.
Do you think you were also trying to show yourself?
To a certain extent, I want to say, yes, I hear what the doctors say. I hear you say that I have the most aggressive form of breast cancer. I hear you saying that, but do I accept it? Once I made up my mind, I hear what you're saying, but I'm not going to accept what you're saying. And then, you know, and I had my ups, you know, I had my downs. As you read in the book, you know, my mom passed before she knew that, you know, I was cancer free. So I still had all this stuff going on. I couldn't go to Ford, you know, when I was sick. So I had all this stuff going on. So working out was not only my outlet, it was also for people that was watching me to encourage them that we can go through whatever we're going through and we're going to make it because look at her, she's doing it.
When you couldn't go to the Ford plant, how were you able to support yourself? Did you have help? Did your community rally?
Well, Ford, I've been there almost 23 years, so I had pretty good health insurance and benefits, and then I was still doing my workouts. So I still got, you know, resources and stuff like that. But I was meeting women that when you're going through chemo, you're with the same group of women. So you become friends. So I was going and the women wasn't showing up. And I'm like, you need this treatment to save your life. Why aren't you guys coming? So once I realized they wasn't coming because they couldn't pay their co-pays, that's when I said, okay, I have a pretty decent job and my co-pays aren't as much as theirs. So that's how I started. Okay, can I pay my copay? And then the next two people that's coming in, can I leave this? And can you pay their copays? So I started paying other people's copays. And then I was blessed. They gave me a wig party. So I had pretty wigs and head scarves. And I was meeting women. All they were getting were their treatment. They weren't getting wigs. They weren't getting anything. So then I said, okay, I'm going to start donating wigs. So once I just kind of started paying copays, and then I started donating wigs, and then it seemed like the more I done, the more these patients was hearing about it, and then the more people was coming to ask me for it.
So the people that you met at the cancer center, can you tell us a little bit about them? You made actually a particular friend I'm thinking about, which I'd like you to tell maybe her story. You made a friend there who started exercising with you.
I met a friend there, and her name was Karen. And I noticed her because she was really loud in the chemo room. And normally that was my job. You know, I'm loud in the chemo room, and, you know, I'm going around, you know, and I'm talking to people. And I met Karen, and we started walking. And she actually is the one that just motivated me, because hers had got to where she really couldn't breathe, you know, real good when we were walking. And she said, you know, I was like, you want to take a break, Karen? You know, you don't have to walk. And she was like, you know, no, you know, I want to walk, you know. So we walked, and people asked me, why do you go do all this speaking? Why do you give when you don't have? Because even if I don't have the donations, I never tell anyone no, even if I have to go in my pocket. And it's because of Karen. I had just got so busy just living my life, and me and Karen was supposed to go shopping, you know, for her some clothes. And I just was busy, you know, so I was like, well, I'll call her back, you know, next week. Well, 1 week turned into 2 weeks. By that time, I figured I'll go see her. We have our appointments together at the cancer center. So I go to the cancer center, and I'm like, where's Karen? You know, she's missing her appointment. And at that time, I was really friends with the nurses, so they gave me information that they shouldn't. They was like, well, we tried, you know, to reach out to you through our husband, and nobody could get a hold of you. But Karen lost her battle. And I'm like, what do you mean she lost her battle? They was like, well, she passed. So not only was I devastated, I was like, okay, she's passed. So can you at least give me her funeral arrangements? That's the least I can do to at least, you know, to go say my farewells. And they was like, we tried to get a hold of you. Her funeral was last week. So not only did I stood her up, and then I didn't get to see her funeral. It was at that moment I vowed, and that's why I go above and beyond, even when I don't have. I said, I don't ever want to miss the opportunity to be there for someone when they need me ever again.
Karen's story, you write about it in your book as part of your thoughts about sort of survivor's guilt and kind of your acknowledgement that cancer doesn't turn out the way it did for you, for everyone, even for people who are trying, like you were, to do their best to be healthy, to keep being active, to defy the odds.
Yes. I mean, at times I did have survivor's guilt. I didn't know what it was at first. I'm just thinking, like, you had the most aggressive form of breast cancer. There's no breast cancer more aggressive than what you had, and you're still here, and Karen is gone. Or you started with this person, and this person's gone. And, you know, why are you still here? So that's why I do, you know, what I do, because I feel that God left me here for a reason, to do what I'm doing.
Well, we're going to come back to this conversation with Yolanda Comack after a short break. When we come back, we'll want to bring you in on the conversation about what makes a healthy person and what makes a healthy community, as well as the obstacles to achieving those things. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back. And we're back in the studio with Yolanda Comack. I'm Gina Kaufman, and I'm talking to Yolanda about her experience fighting breast cancer and becoming kind of a fitness leader in her community in Raytown, partly as a result of what she experienced there. And we were just talking before we went to break about the ordeal with breast cancer. Can you talk a little bit about getting your all clear? Because I think that's a really interesting story.
The type of cancer that I have, they want you to stay cancer-free for 5 years to lessen your chances of it not coming back. So I'm at my fourth year now, and I'm human. So every year I'm like, am I going to, you know, stay cancer-free this year? Am I going to stay cancer-free? And I just try to concentrate on making it to that 5 years and not get discouraged. I've started this journey with one of my friends, Miss Jan. She works at Walmart, and we had the same kind, triple negative. And we were both celebrating 4 years. We made it 4 years, and hers is back. Hers is back, and it's to the point to where now is spread it. So while I'm trying not to worry about my situation, I'm spending every day I can with her because hers is terminal, you know, so she's not going to survive this time. So is it scary this last year, you know, for me to not have those human thoughts like 4 years, you know? But my faith, my faith is so strong that I know that I'm going to be so busy helping these other women. And most of the women I meet, some of them, they're survivors. Some of them, when I meet them, I know that they're not going to survive. So my job is whatever time I have with them, make an impression on them.
Well, something that interested me about when you received your All Clear is that you had this kind of combination of confidence that you could just feel that you were better, but also nervousness about what if I'm wrong. And then you get there and she tells you you don't have cancer anymore. You're happy for like a second before right. You start getting the statistics about remission.
Right.
What do you think about that? How do you feel about the way that happened?
It was tough. You know, you get there. Now that one, I took my sister with me, you know, because I'm like, you know, just in case. So she was like, you're cancer free. And at that moment, I think all while battling cancer, yes, I had my tears. At that moment, it was just like the floodgates, like I did it, you know, I did it. You know, as soon as I celebrated for 2 minutes, she goes, well, I'm going to have to tell you the type that you have, it has the highest reoccurrence rate. So you have to stay cancer-free 5 years. And then she starts saying, you know, 45% of the women, it comes back. And then it comes back as ovarian cancer, or it comes back. You know, then she starts saying all this. And I'm thinking, like, you give me good news, then you snatch it from me. So I just started, you know, reading, you know, how can I stay healthy? You know, how can I at least prevent this? And so I, you know, started eating healthier. I ate healthy before, but at that time I said, you know what? I'm going to try to eat healthier, you know, just to prevent from me having to come back in 5 years and having to do this all over again.
You went back to the floor of the Ford shop practically the second you were done with treatment and had your All Clear. Maybe it was even before you had the All Clear. I don't remember.
Right. I was just tired. You know, everybody was at work. So, you know, I could go visit people. And then, you know, I just had to be doing something. You know, so they were going to go down. They shut down the first 2 weeks of July. I said, well, maybe if I go the end of August, then I can just work a week and just get back into the swing of it. And I mean, I got up the night before and laid my coveralls out like it was the first day of school. You know, I was just excited to go back to work. But now I'm doing so much now, you know, with my gym and the speaking. Now when I go to Ford, I'm like, I don't want to be here.
Really? But what do you do there? Talk about exactly what you do there.
Right now I work in the body shop. It's a job that belongs in the stamping plant. Then I have to say hi to my partner, Jolie. She let me leave today. So I build up parts for the line. So whatever the line is doing, we build those parts up, and then the line is able to run. So I'm doing the job, and I kind of swing her around because I'm trying to work real fast to build these parts up because I want to leave and get to the gym. So some days I leave, and I go straight to the gym.
Are you aware that there are people who don't like working out?
I am aware that people don't like working out. I'm aware, and I have a shirt to say if it was easy, everybody would do it. You know, you don't like going to work sometime, but you want your paycheck. So if you don't take care of your body, who's going to take care of it?
When you were going through your whole breast cancer ordeal, there were a lot of things that you couldn't keep doing, and we've talked about that. But the one thing you made a commitment to continue doing was working out for an hour every day. Why was that the thing that, above all else, just for you, surfaced as this is the thing that I have to do, the one thing?
The one thing I told myself was, okay, cancer, you have taken my hair. I lost two teeth. I lost two teeth going through chemo. I can't go to work. Some of my daughter's track meets I want to be at, and I can't go. But I will not work out. You will not take that from me. That I felt that was the only thing that I had control over. You're attacking my body. So certain things I have no control over. It destroys some relationships. You know, some friendships was destroyed. So that was one thing that I told myself is, you're not going to stop me from working out. I could only do like 10 minutes, and then I went to an hour.
Can you talk a little bit about those relationships and how they were affected? There's a point where you talk about praying to be only surrounded by positive people, and then you caution your readers to only make that prayer if you're ready for the consequences.
I did. I said, I know that I'm supposed to be doing something at this time. And I know you asked me earlier, you're Yolanda Comack, but you're Lonnie Bush. And how that came about is my sister, she created me a Facebook page, you know, because I was in the bed. And I'm like, I don't have nothing to do. I done read everything. I'm bored. And she was like, well, just stay in touch with your friends. Let me create you a Facebook page. So she created it under Yolanda Comack, which Yolanda's my name, and Comack was my married name. She said, but nobody knows you as Yolanda Comack. She said, everyone knows you as Lonnie Bush. So she said, let's create Lonnie Bush. And once I created that page, I got friend requests. I got so many now that I can't accept anymore on either page. And so I said, we get on there and we're doing that. And I said, well, you know, Lord, I know I'm supposed to be doing something else. So anybody that's in my life that's not supposed to be there, or they're going to stress me while I'm going through this, remove them. I had no idea what I was asking.
Yeah, what happened?
I had a friend. We were like really good friends. I mean, she would come over. We would talk on the phone. I literally didn't hear from her. I mean, she didn't come visit me. She didn't text me. She didn't call me, you know, or anything. And at that time, you know, I had a boyfriend. He left me for someone else while I was sick. I had a teenage son who literally, I didn't know where he was.
And that was a misunderstanding that's really unfortunate.
Really, really unfortunate. At that time, I'm just thinking like, okay, he's stressing me. You know, I can't fight stress. I can't fight to, you know, to stay well in stress. So I don't know where he is. So I'm going to pray for him and I'm going to let you handle it. Well, halfway through my battle, my son comes to me and he tells me that one of my sisters told him, you're stressing your mom. And if she dies, it's your fault. So my son is dealing with that. So rather than to feel like it's his fault, my son he leaves.
And so that brings me to the question of, what are some mistakes people make when trying to relate to someone going through this?
Sometimes you try to relate, and even though you mean well by that person, you have to watch what you say. Somebody very well may be stressing them, but if you tell them and push them away, you destroy their support system. Some people don't know how to relate to someone battling because they can't fix it. So if they can't fix it, then they just go, or you take it out on them. You know, some days I was mean. Some days I didn't feel like being bothered. But you have to have people in your corner, to where my sister and then my friend Lisa, they just was like, we know you're being mean, but we're not going anywhere.
Refusing to let you...
to push them away.
Yeah. What do you think it is about those relationships that were able to survive this? I mean, as well as you surviving it, your relationships that did survive it.
They love you. They support you. I meet so many women. They don't have that support system. And those women are the ones that's most likely to say, I'm not even going to fight. You know what I mean? So I try to support women that don't have that support system. I try to be there for them to say, you know, okay, you don't have friends, or okay, your kids are not supporting you, but, you know, you have me. You have somebody.
And so at your gym now, you do have also through that space, you operate your nonprofit, which you do fundraisers for cancer patients and their families. They're very specific kinds of fundraisers, and you raise money for things so specific to the lived experience of having cancer that I feel like maybe only someone who survived it would think about it. Like a recent fundraiser where you raised money for people who have cancer, their children's school supplies. Talk about what was it that you had experienced that let you know this was an issue?
Me going through breast cancer, even though I had a good job, going to the hospital two or three times a week, going, you know, if it was hard for me to pay the copays and I have decent money, I know it had to be tough. So Christmas time, I just asked for donations. I asked my clients for donations, and we did a Pink Christmas where cancer patients came, brought their children's school supply list, and they were able to get their school supplies. Christmas, they was able to come do Christmas shopping. Thanksgiving, we'll do dinners. So on October, which is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, I go anywhere they invite me because Breast Cancer Month is big in October. So my speaking engagements, anything I do October, because I try to get enough funds because I have to help these women the other 364 days.
Well, we're going to come back to our conversation with Yolanda Bush in just a couple moments. We're going to get back to our conversation about what makes a healthy person in a healthy community. And we'll take your calls at 816-235-2888. We'll be back in a minute. We're back with Yolanda Comack, also known as Lonnie Bush. We're talking to her about her experiences that have only increased her commitment to fitness, her experiences with breast cancer. But we're also talking to her about what she does in Raytown and her community fitness. I would call it a boot camp. I attended one of your classes, and during your classes, people get mad at you because you are pushing them so hard. You took people outside, made them run sprints, threatened to lock them out of the building if they took a shortcut. If people stop to rest, you call them out with a menacing, I see you. How do you stay so tough with people when you obviously care about them?
I do. And everyone knows when they come in there. Before class, I'm friendly. I'm talking to you. We're hugging. We're laughing. Once that class starts, I am not your friend. I'll say, come on, friend. And then they'll say, I'm not your friend. Because for 1 hour, my only goal is to train you. You know, this might be your first and last time, but for this hour, I am not your friend. Then after class, we hug, we make right back up because I love getting stories saying, my doctor took me off my high blood pressure medication or my blood sugar, you know, is good. You know, I love getting those stories. And if me pushing you, making you mad for an hour is going to get me those stories and those results, I don't mind doing it.
You had at that class too some teenage boys who, I don't know what had brought them there, but I got the impression that they thought they were going to coast right through this class.
Exactly. They told their mom, you know, you come home tired, we're going to go ace this class. Believe it or not, I get a lot of men that come because they lift weights, they bench press, they be, you know, we can hang with her an hour. Surely this is all talk and the class is not that tough. So when they come in there, of course, I'll be, you know, you don't want those heavy weights. Yeah, I could do these. So after about 10 minutes, they realize, okay, my ego's been crushed a little bit. Let me just go on and finish this class up.
I saw that you had gone over to these boys at one point, and one of them was doing something really fast, which made it a little easier. And you said, slow down, slow down, slow down. Doesn't that feel better? And he's yelling back, no. Do you feel like you have to get into character at all to do this? Because it is such a different, you take on, I am telling you, you take on a totally different personality.
I do. Fitness and health is my passion. I mean, I literally wake up thinking about it. My daughter have woke up out of her sleep and goes, Mom, you're counting in your sleep again.
Like counting out the counts for people
yes.
to work out.
Mom, I just literally am always thinking of what can I do to improve? What can I do to keep it exciting? People get bored. You know, they go to the gym and I was on a roll, but I just lost my motivation. It's boring. So I have to keep it fresh. Some days I show up, I don't even know what I'm going to do, but I'll come up with something for an hour.
You had people in your class also sort of accusing you of, now she's just making things up.
That's what I do. I'll lay a paper on the floor like, I got it. This is what we're going to do. I forget all about that paper. Sometimes I don't know what I'm going to do, but after I do it, I'm like, yeah, this is fun.
So you're doing these workouts for other people. Are those your workouts too? Or just, I mean, you're lifting things at the Ford plant all day, but how do you get your own workout?
Mondays and Wednesdays, after my last class, there's other classes that go on like Zumba, line dance. So while they're doing that class, that's when I can get my workout in. But I actually, you know, most of my classes, I'll take a little break, but I work out right along with them.
Do you have any little daily rituals that keep you grounded, that keep you, I mean, because you're so much movement. Do you have any grounding rituals?
I try, you know, at night, after everyone sleep, I'm very spiritual. That's when I take that time, you know, to talk to the Lord, to, you know, to motivate, you know, myself to go on with the next day. You know, like I told you, even though I'm an encourager, I encourage people, I motivate them. You know, sometimes I have to encourage myself. So if I don't encourage myself, then I'll end up drained because I take on other people's problems. You know, and I'm dealing with breast cancer patients and, you know, I just paid for my first funeral, you know, so I have to encourage myself so that I can have encouragement to give to them. So that's what I do at night when the house is quiet. That's my time to get myself together for the next day.
Speaking of needing to encourage yourself, a lot of people could be hearing this and thinking, well, this is just impossible that someone does all these healthy things all the time. So I guess I'm curious, do you have any little cheats ever?
Oh, yes, I do. I mean, I try to eat right. You know, but just like everyone else, I like warm chocolate chip cookies. My coffee, I like the whipped cream on it and, you know, stuff like that. So I still indulge. The difference in someone just eating like that and me is I know the next day I'm going to go burn those calories off.
Are there limits that you put around the indulgences, or do you just accept that an indulgence will happen when it happens? And
if I want something, I'm going to have it. if I want a piece of chocolate cake, I'm going to have it. Now, there are certain things you will never see me eat. I don't eat meat. I eat seafood. I'll eat some fried fish or something like that. But eating fried food 2 to 3 times a week, there are certain things that I'll never do. But there are some things at night, you know, when I'm watching TV, I like a glass of red wine, you know, so I still indulge. You could catch me on Fridays, Saturdays.
So how do you talk to the people who you're trying to encourage in their own healthy living in terms of sort of balancing those indulgences with an overall healthy lifestyle?
I give them a healthy meal plan. I tell them how to cleanse, you know, I tell them, okay, you work out, you know, this many days a week. And I tell everyone, because when they come, they was like, well, we hear you hard and I just can't do it. So I tell everyone, if you give me 30 days and just do what I say, if you don't lose any weight or any inches, I will give you all your money back. I have never refunded any money. If you just give yourself 30 days, you're not still going to like it. Those people come to class, they still don't like it, but they like the results. So you're not going to like the workout and
do you like
the results.
Do you like to work out or do you more like the results?
I think it's both. I mean, I like working out. I love the results. I like to wake up the next day and reach for something and my arm hurt. That just like makes me feel like I've done something.
When you help people through this process, do you ever sort of find yourself struggling to find the thing that's going to motivate this particular person? Because different things motivate different people, and you've got this huge, diverse community.
Sometimes I do. You know, sometimes, and sadly, sometimes you have to accept this person is, they just don't want it bad enough. Most of the time, if I meet somebody the first time, when they leave, I know that they're not ever coming back. You know, I know that, you know, so I try to reach as many people as I can. But I accept that some people I'm not going to be able to encourage. So let me go ahead and hug you. And I know you're not coming back. And those are normally the people I'll see in Walmart, a Quick Trip again, but not back in the gym.
I've heard that when you do run into people out in public, you have them like stop and run sprints and stuff. Is that true?
If they haven't been to class in a long time, you're not coming back to class. So can I have 5 jumping jacks? Or I mean, I've literally went to Walmart and see like clothes moving, or they literally hide. They literally hide from me.
Have you ever demanded jumping jacks and had someone refuse in public, deny you?
No. I mean, they'll do it and they'll be mad. You know what I mean? But I haven't had nobody like, I'm not doing it. You know, I'm not. So some people will flat out say no or don't. Like right now, I'm doing a ice water workout challenge. They come, they do the ice water, and they do a workout move, and then they'll donate, and then all that money is going to assist cancer patients. But I have people saying, well, I'm going to donate, but you're not about to pour that on me, you know, like that. But most of the time when they come and I be like, all right, give me 5 squats, they'll do it.
What is your definition of a healthy person?
A healthy person is someone that's at least within 20 pounds of what they're supposed to weigh. A healthy person is someone that's not on, you know, and then you can be, you know, healthy and still on, you know, blood pressure medication. But my goal is to get you off of it, or either get your doses lower. You know, I want you to enjoy your grandkids. I want you to be able to walk to the park, to walk up a flight of steps. I want you to be able to do all that.
Do you what about a healthy community? How do you define a healthy community?
A healthy community is that's the tough part, especially when I want to reach when they're small. You know what I mean? If you're teaching your kids how to eat healthy, you know, and then, you know, they're eating their fruit, they're eating their vegetables, everything's not coming out of a drive-through. But in some communities, you have to make those resources available. Some of these people, all they have is the corner store. They don't have bananas and fruit, you know, and stuff in there. And it just breaks my heart to see overweight parents and then their kids are overweight, because then you're setting them up to struggle for the rest of their life, just like you're struggling.
Is there more to it than weight?
Yes. Sometimes it's weight. And then sometimes you have to find out why you're overeating. Sometimes you're not hungry. Some people are dealing with stress. Some people are dealing with depression. Some people are dealing with all these other things and they overeat. So is stress. You know, in a perfect world, I would love to be able to have counseling for people, you know, that's overweight. That's, well, why are you overeating? You know, if you can address all those issues of what they're going through, it's easier for you to help them. Their weight is just a small problem.
Do you think that is weight a pretty big problem in the Raytown community where you work and live?
It's a problem. When I go out, you know, somewhere, I see overweight people. I see overweight friends. But I have to draw the line of being caring and a friend or offending someone. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You want to help them. You want them to show up. But I don't want you to be offended, but I want to help you.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for this conversation. It's been really a pleasure to get to know you better.
Thank you for having me.
That's all the time we have for today's conversation with Yolanda Comack, also known as Lonnie Bush. To see Paul Andrews' photograph of Yolanda Comack, just go to kcur.org/centralstandard later today, and you can listen back to today's show while you're there. On Monday, we'll be kicking off a series following a handful of high school seniors as they work toward graduation. We're calling it Class of 2015. During Monday's show, we'll find out what's at stake in the senior year of high school. Tune in. Central Standard is produced by Sylvia Maria Gross and Matthew Long Middleton, with lots of help from interns Matt Hodap and Christina Leffring. Linda Scher runs the board for us every day. Our theme music is by Spoonbender Labs. I'm Gina Kaufman. The standard's been set. Stick around for Up to Date next.